Chapter 17. Richmond West End's only bookseller exulted with every sale he made to the would-be pioneers who passed through here. Books, printed on paper, every one of them, dead tree technology, information that, if carefully stored, would last for millennia, and no batteries required. It ought to be on an ad hoarding, he thought. If Humphrey Llewellyn III could have his way, every book ever written would be treasured, at least one copy bound in sheepskin and illuminated by monks, more specifically by naked nuns, his predilection being somewhat biased in that direction. So now, he hoped, here was a chance to bring mankind back into the book-loving fold. He gloated. There was still no electronics in the pioneer worlds, was there? Where was your internet? Ha! Where was Google? Where was your mother's old Kindle? Your iPad 25? Where was Wikipedia? Very primly, he always called it that, just to show his disdain. Very few people noticed. All gone, unbelievers. All those fancy toy gadgets stuffed in drawers, screens blank as the eyes of corpses, left behind. Books. Oh yes, real books were flying off his shelves. Out in the long earth, humanity was starting again in the Stone Age. It needed to know the old ways. It needed to know what to eat and what not to eat. It needed to know how to build an outdoor privy and how to manure fields with human and animal waste in safe proportions. It needed to know about wells, about shoemaking. Yes, it had to know how to find iron ore, but also how to work graphite and how to make ink. And so Humphrey's presses ran hot, with geological maps and surveys and commonplace books and almanacs, reclaiming the knowledge that had been all but lost to the printed page. He stroked a polished leather volume. Oh, sooner or later, all that knowledge once more would be precariously imprisoned by electricity. But for now, the books had been patient long enough, and their time had come again. In another part of Richmond West End, meanwhile, there was a kind of labour market, where companies tried to find recruits to fill the remaining gaps. Franklin Tallyman carefully pushed his way through the crowd, holding his sign above his head. It was a hot day, and he wished he had drunk more water. He was approached by a small party led by a middle-aged man.
"You are Mr. Tallyman, the blacksmith? We saw your resume at the Prairie Marble Inn."
He nodded.
"Yes, sir, that's me."
"We're looking to complete our company."
The man stuck out a hand.
"The name's Green. Jack Green. This gentleman is Mr. Batson, our captain. Tallyman, isn't that a Caribbean name?"
"No, sir. It's a Caribbean job description, as far as I know. I could be wrong. I've never been there. I was born in Birmingham, in England, not in Alabama. The original and best."
He got back blank looks.
"So you have looked at my resume?"
An anxious-looking woman asked,
"You really can do all you say? Make bronze? Does anyone do that these days?"
"Yes, ma'am. Back on West Warner, spent 4 years as apprentice to smiths who knew their stuff. As for iron, starting from scratch, all I need is the ore. I can make my own forge. I can make my own furnace. I can draw wires. By the way, I'm a fair electrician. Give me a water wheel and I can fit up your colony with electricity. Oh, and weapons. I can knock up a decent musket. It couldn't compete with a modern design, but good enough for hunting.
The engagement I'm looking for is 3 years.
He was warming to his pitch now.
"Under the Aegis regulations, I will have American citizenship by the end of the 3rd year. You, ladies and gentlemen, will be way ahead of the curve."
He held out his notebook, opened at a page.
"And this is what you will pay me, please."
There was a gasp from the would-be citizens of the new frontier. Eventually, Green said,
"Is this negotiable?"
"Only upwards, I'm afraid. You can make a deposit in Pioneer support. Oh, if you want me to train up an apprentice, then that will be extra, on account of they would be more of a hindrance than a help."
He smiled before their doubtful faces. It wasn't the moment for a hard sell, he decided. They looked a decent bunch, just folk keen to step westward with a group of like-minded individuals, looking for a place to spread out, a place where you could trust your neighbours, in a world where the air was clean and you could start over in search of a better future. It was the dream. It had always been the dream. Even their kids looked bright as buttons.
Look, Mr. Green, I've done my homework too. I've seen your company's prospectus, and I can see that a lot of thought has gone into your venture. You've got your medic, your carpenter, you've got a chemist. I like your style. Yours won't be the only offer I could get today, but you guys appear to be a solid bunch, with your head screwed on right. I'm with you if you want me. Do we have a deal?
They had a deal. That night, Franklin packed his bags and his non-ferrous toolbox for the journey. Now all he had to do was to make sure he kept his secret for the duration of the trek, and that meant making sure he didn't try to step without a potato in his stepper. He had heard about natural steppers on the net. Then, back in West One, just for the hell of it, one night he tried to step with the potato out of the box, a box without power. He was amazed when it worked. Oddly enough, he still needed the box to throw the switch. He needed to hear the click to be able to step, it seemed. How weird was that? Yes, he'd heard rumours about people like him, and other rumours about beatings of such people, like you were a freak or unnatural. So he'd keep himself to himself on the trek, and replace the potato and fake the nausea and all the rest. It wasn't so hard when you got the habit. Although you did start to wonder how many of those around you were similarly faking too. He slept well that night, dreaming of hot forges and distant hills.